Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
Morning.
Wow. As Michael said, I still feel like I'm part of this group, but the group has really grown. Lots of new faces. It's great. It's great. So a couple of months ago, in March, I was in Jalapa, Veracruz for a weekend retreat. I've been going to Montaña Despierta in Jalapa, Awakened Mountain. Different than mountain rain, but mountain. Really ever since I've been in Mexico. I was going to say over 10 years here, but I don't know, 15. And the organizers asked me for a theme for my talks. And for some reason, I still don't know why, I said the Platform Sutra, the Sutra of Ueno. And probably some of you are familiar and some of you are not familiar with the Platform Sutra. So I'm going to repeat some and I'm going to skip some. Just bear with me. I just want to talk about a few key moments or passages in the sutra, but I should fill in a little background first. The Platform Sutra is a teaching that's attributed to Ueno, known as the sixth Zen ancestor. The first Zen or Chan ancestor was Bodhidharma, who traveled from the Indian subcontinent to China in the 5th or 6th century of the Common Era. The generally accepted dates for Weinong are from 638 to 713 CE. There's no definitive version of the text. What we have was written after Weinong's lifetime, and whatever in it that may have come from his mouth, from the real historical Weinong, was certainly elaborated upon by others. We may be a little bit used to seeing different translations of text, various different translations, for instance, of the Heart Sutra, that are a little bit different. In this case, there are various versions of the original text and then various translations that we're dealing with. And I want to use mostly a fairly recent version that was published by Red Pine, but I'm going to also steal things from other versions and other translations. I find it useful to think of the late scholar and translator John McRae, and I'm actually going to share some things from his translation of the Platform Sutra. John McRae's rules for Zen studies include this statement: it's not true, and therefore it's more important. The idea is that a teaching that has persisted in the Zen tradition for centuries really has something important to tell us from the tradition. And whether or not it's actually journalistically true is not so important. You know, a meeting between two old Zen ancestors that might have just sat down together and said, hello, how are you, let's have some tea, may not be so important. And a fictitious meeting where they really share the Dharma that's stayed in our tradition has something to tell us. So if it's not true, and it stayed in the tradition, it stayed in the tradition for a good reason. So maybe some of the things in this Platform Sutra are not historically or journalistically true. But who cares? So here we go. At the beginning, of the Platform Sutra, Wainung introduces himself to the group that's assembled to hear him talk. And he asks the assembly to purify their minds by reciting the teaching of the Mahaprajna Paramita. And he doesn't begin speaking again until he has done so himself. According to Redpine, we're not exactly sure what it was that they did. Maybe it was kind of like an image that they brought up in meditation. Maybe it was a chant like the chant that we just did. But they did something to purify their minds before the talk. And then Wainung shares some details of his biography. His father was a minor official in China and had been exiled to the south by the time that Wainung was born. Lots of politics in China then and now. And his father died when Wainung was only 3 years old. When he was old enough, he supported his widowed mother by selling firewood. And one day after making a delivery, he came across someone reciting the Diamond Sutra. "As soon as I heard the words," he says, "my mind felt clear and awake." So he asks this person about the text, and he learns that it was a teaching recommended by Hongren, the fifth Zen ancestor. And he knows that he has to meet Hongren. So he arrives at Hongren's monastery after a month-long journey and approaches the master. Hongren asks him, "Where are you from? And what exactly do you hope to get from me by coming to this mountain to pay your respects?" Wainung is not timid. "Your disciple is from Lingnan, a commoner of Xinzhou. The reason I came all this way to pay my respects is I want to be a Buddha. I don't want anything else." And Hongren challenges him, "But you're a jungle rat from Lingnan. How can you possibly be a Buddha?" And Wainung responds, "People come from the north or south, not their Buddha nature. The lives of this jungle rat and the masters aren't the same, but how can their Buddha nature differ?" Well said. Don't you agree? Well, Hongren sends him off to work pounding rice for the monastery kitchen. I'm going to skip over the next part of the story. It is interesting and important, but it's not what I really want to talk about today. I'll just say that Hongren, the fifth ancestor, secretly declares Wainung to be his successor, the sixth ancestor, and gives him the robe and bowl that were passed down from Bodhidharma through the five generations before. And he then advises Wainung to run and hide, since the monks will be jealous that an illiterate newcomer from a disrespected background, not even an ordained monk, would be declared the sixth ancestor. So Hongren helps him a little bit to find his way to ferry across the river, and Wainung's on his way. Case 23 of the Mumonkan tells of an incident that occurred during Wainung's flight. Mumonkan case 23. Think neither good nor evil. The case. The sixth patriarch, Wainung, was once pursued by the monk Myo as far as Mount Dayu. Names, I'm sure you already know, names can be a little confusing. There's a given name, an ordained name, there are Chinese pronunciations and Japanese pronunciations, and a new name may be given to somebody after they die. And anyway, this monk Myo I'm going to mention by another name when I read another part. But he's a retired general, described as being a very robust. And Wei Nung is described as being kind of frail and small. Anyway, the patriarch, seeing Myo coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "The robe represents the faith. How can it be competed for by force? I will allow you to take it away." Myo tried to lift it up, but it was immovable as a mountain. Terrified and trembling with awe, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please reveal it to me." The patriarch said, Wei Nung said, "At the very moment you were chasing after me, without thinking good or evil, what was the primal face of Monk Myo?" And at that instant, Myo suddenly attained a deep realization, and his whole body was covered with sweat. In tears, he bowed and said, "Besides the secret words and secret meaning you have just revealed to me, is there anything else deeper yet?" The patriarch said, "What I have now preached to you is no secret at all. If you reflect on your own true face, the secret will be found within yourself." Myo said, "Though I have been at Obai with the other monks," he's talking about Hongren's monastery, "I have never realized what my true self is. Now, thanks to your instructions, I know it is like a man who drinks water and knows for himself whether it is cold or warm. Now you, lay brother, are my master." The patriarch said, "If that's the way you feel, let us both have Obai for our master. Be mindful and hold fast to what you have realized." We fill our minds with thoughts, feelings, judgments, memories, plans, words, phrases, songs, a lot of noise. We think we have a past and a future. And with all this, we think about good and bad. And the question, what is good? What is bad? Where does our capacity to be like this come from? What is its source? We think that our identity means our characteristics, our gender, our preferences, habits, customs, everything that defines us as individuals. But before this definition, what is there? When something that we think defines us changes or is destroyed, what then? Does anything last? Well, this is the question that provokes General Myo. Without thinking good or evil at this moment, what is your true nature? Mumon, who collected the cases of the Mumon Khan, of the gateless barrier, made a commentary. "It should be said of the sixth patriarch that his action sprang from urgent circumstances. His kindness is like that of a grandmother who peels a fresh lychee, removes the seed, and puts it into your mouth so that all that you have to do is swallow it." And Muma added a verse. "It can't be destroyed. It can't be pictured. It can't be sufficiently praised. Stop trying to grasp it with your head. There is nowhere to hide the primal face. Even when the world is destroyed, it is indestructible." It is indestructible. But What is it? What can't be destroyed? Well, remember that this meeting happened shortly after Wei Nung had received Hongren's Dharma transmission on Mount Wangming. Former General Chen Weishun, that I just called Myo, calls him lay brother because the former general is already a monk ordained by Hongren, and Wei Nung has not shaved his head and taken the precepts to be ordained. After the encounter, the general returned to the group that was chasing after Wei Nung, and he told them that he had searched for Wei Nung but could not find any trace of him. He said, "We'd better look elsewhere." Wei Nung, for his part, fled and hid. And after 15 years in hiding, he decided that the time had come to spread the teaching. And he went to the Fasheng Temple in Guangzhou. And there, Master Yinsong was teaching the Nirvana Sutra. Now I'm going to read a little bit from a different translation of a different version of the sutra. Said Wei Nung, "One day, I realized that the time had come to disseminate the Dharma, that I could not hide forever. Accordingly, I left the mountains and went to Fashengxi Monastery, a monastery of the Dharma nature, in Guangzhou, where I encountered Dharma Master Yinsong lecturing on the Nirvana Sutra. At that time, the wind was blowing, and the banner announcing the lecture was moving. One monk said that the wind was moving, while another monk said the banner was moving. They argued on and on. So I went forward and said, 'It is not the wind that is moving, and it is not the banner that is moving, it is your minds that are moving.' Everyone listening was amazed. Yinsong had me brought up to the dais, where he examined me on the import of what I had said. Hearing me say that the discrimination of the truth did not depend on written words, Yinsong said, 'You are certainly an extraordinary person. Long ago, I heard that the robe and bowl of Wangmei had come south. Might you be the one who received them?' I said, 'In all modesty, I am.' At this, Yinsong bowed to me and asked me to bring forth the robe and bowl to show to the assembly. He questioned me further, saying, 'What instructions did you receive at Wangmei?' I said, 'I received no instructions. Hongren and I only discussed seeing the nature. We did not discuss samadhi and emancipation.' Yinsong said, 'Why did you not discuss samadhi and emancipation?' I said, 'Because the dualistic dharmas are not Buddhism. Buddhism consists of non-dualistic dharmas.' Yinsong also asked, 'How is it that Buddhism consists of non-dualistic dharmas?' I said, 'The Buddha taught there are two types of good roots. One is permanent, and the other is impermanent. The Buddha nature is not permanent and not impermanent. To have no root is said to be non-dual. One type of roots is said to be good and the other is not the good. The Buddha nature is neither the good nor the not good. This is called non-dual. The skandhas and sensory realms are seen as two by ordinary people, but the wise comprehend their natures to be non-dual. The non-dual nature is none other than the Buddha nature. When Yinzong heard this explanation, he joyfully held his palms together and said, "My lecturing on the sutra was like a worthless piece of roof tile or rock, while your explanation is like gold." At this, he administered the tonsure for me and asked me to serve as his teacher. So finally, Wei Nong is ordained. Moman added this commentary when he discusses case 29, which his story is case 29 in the Moman Khan. Moman said, "It is not the wind that moves, it is not the flag that moves, it is not the mind that moves. Where do you see the essence of the patriarch? If you have a close grasp of the matter, you will see how the two monks intending to buy iron got gold, and that what the patriarch impatiently said was a failure on the spot." Hold on. It sounds like Moman doesn't agree with Wei Nong. He says, it's not the wind that moves, it's not the flag that moves, it's not the mind that moves. Why would he say that? It sounds like Dogen. Well, about 150 years after Wei Nong's time, there was a female disciple of Yangshan named Miaoshen. She was appointed to be the director of the monastery guest house. And Dogen wrote about this, about her, in Shobogenzo Raihai Tokusui. While Miaoshen filled this position, there was a group of 17 monks from Shu in the west who were on the road in search of a master. On their way to climb up the mountain to Yangshan's monastery, they stopped and stayed at the guest house. While they rested in the evening, they discussed the story about the wind and the banner of Wei Nong, high ancestor of Jiaoxi. The 17 monks' interpretations were all wrong. Miaoshen, who overheard the discussion outside the room, said, "How wasteful! How many pairs of straw sandals have these 17 blind donkeys worn out? They haven't even dreamed of Buddha Dharma." Her assistant worker told them that Miaoshen had not approved their understanding. And instead of being upset with her disapproval, the monks were ashamed of their lack of understanding. They got formally dressed, offered incense, bowed, and asked her to teach. Miaoshen said, "Come closer." When the 17 monks were still getting closer, Miaoshen said, "It is not that wind flaps, it is not that the banner flaps, it is not that your mind flaps." Hearing her words, all 17 monks had realization. They thanked her and formally became her students. Soon after, they went back to Shu without bothering to climb up to Yangshan's monastery. Maybe we can see the flag as each one of us, and the wind as our surroundings, our environment. If our environment is good and healthy, we may feel the same, good and healthy. But if the environment is contaminated, by the three poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance, we can be adversely affected. Or maybe it's that when we are noble and good, we create a healthy environment, and when we act unskillfully, it is reflected in our environment. Is it nature or nurture? Are we shaped by our genetic heritage or by experience? It's an old discussion and a useless one. One side cannot exist without the other. And we can't somehow stand outside to judge. Archimedes famously said, "Give me a place to stand on, and I will move the earth." But there's nowhere outside the earth where he could stand. Movement, like a flag flapping in the wind, is perceived against stability. They're relative to each other. Movement and stability form a duality, which the mind perceives. But before movement and stability, before perception, what is there? This is Muman's verse from that case 29. The wind moves, the flag moves, the mind moves. All have missed it. They only know how to open their mouths and do not know that their words had failed. So I would have liked to have edited this talk a little bit that I have here, and I didn't have a means to do that, so now I'm going to do the cut and paste that I would have done, could I have done it. Read a little and go back and read some more. So there was a monk, a young monk named Shen Hui, who had an encounter with Wei Nong when Shen Hui was 13 years old. When he first meets Wei Nong, Wei Nong says to him, "My dear friend, it must have been very difficult for you to undertake such a long journey." He came from far away to meet the master. "But can you tell me, what is the fundamental principle? If you are able, you know the essence of mine. Please try to say something." This is Wei Nong, the sixth patriarch, talking to a 13-year-old aspirante, a 13-year-old that aspires to be a monk. And Shen Hui replies with a more or less memorized answer, as if it were from a catechism. And Wei Nong criticizes him for giving a very superficial answer instead of answering from his own heart. Shen Hui asks Wei Nong, "When the master meditates, does he see or not?" The master got up and hit Shen Hui three times. And then he asked Shen Hui, "When I hit you, did it hurt or not?" Shen Hui answered, "It hurt and it didn't hurt." And the sixth patriarch said, "Well, I see and I don't see." Shen Hui asked the master again, "What do you mean? You see and you don't see." The master said, "As for I see, what I always see are my own faults. So I say I see." And as for I don't see, what I don't see are the faults of others, either on earth or in heaven. So, I see and I don't see. What do you mean? It hurt and it didn't hurt. Shen Wei answered, if it didn't hurt, I would be the same as a lifeless stick or a rock. And if it hurt, I would be the same as an ordinary person, still subject to anger. The master said, Shen Wei, this do you see or not just now was dualistic. But it hurt and it didn't hurt was sansaric. You don't see your own nature, and yet you dare to come here and play games. Shen Wei bowed and didn't dare say anything more. So the master said, if you're too deluded to see your own mind, ask a good friend to help you find the way. Only when you understand and see your own mind will you put the Dharma into practice. But you're too deluded to see your own mind. And now you've come here to ask me if I see or not. What I don't know can't take the place of your ignorance. And how can what you understand take the place of mine? Why don't you practice? Then ask me if I see or not. Shen Wei bowed and became a disciple, and he didn't leave Shaoxi Mountain and was always in attendance. Shen Wei became a successor to Wei Nong. And in fact, it was through Shen Wei and his successors that we have Wei Nong's teachings recorded in the Platform Sutra. What did Wei Nong mean by I see and I don't see? How can we practice with this? What I always see are my own faults, so I say I see. And as for I don't see, what I don't see are the faults of others. He said this, but it seems that, yes, he did see Shen Wei's faults. Is this a case of speaking about direct practice, but not practicing with a direct mind? Wei Nong has already told us that such a person is not a disciple of the Buddha. We might understand Wei Nong's I see and I don't see to mean I see my own heart, but I can't see the hearts of others. Or possibly, I have my own experience. I can't have someone else's experience. But I think we can go beyond that. As a teacher, Wei Nong can and should see the capabilities of his students, their moments of clarity, and their moments of being stuck. And as a teacher, he should try to respond skillfully. His I don't see can also be seen to mean I don't let the actions of another person's body, speech, and mind disturb my composure. I don't see could mean not holding resentment, not judging, or considering yourself superior, living in the uncertainty of the question. How should we respond? Without reacting. This would also be a skillful practice for seeing one's own faults. Respond, don't react. So the first two little stories that I told are found in the koan literature. This third one, as far as I know, doesn't appear in any of the koan collections, but it ought to be in one. I see and I don't see. So, thank you very much for your patience. Thanks for coming, filling this wonderful zendo. I hope that we see each other again. Muchas gracias.
Page 3
of your agenda. May our intention equally extend to every being and place.